Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program today. My guest is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We'd love to have your questions for him. Call those in to area code 765-496-1999. Email ask at WBAA.org, or you can tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. So I don't see you carrying a snow shovel, nor do I see you, wearing shorts.
Big boots, a big old
wearing
Eskimo
short
jacket.
Sleeves. How's your wardrobe doing as you're going around watching the city?
You know what? That really is tough. When you live in Indiana, you think every time you dress, you're going to be as happy as taffy. But invariably, what you wear in the morning isn't going to survive to the evening. So I'm just grateful that it's heated in here. I'm grateful that there's no water flowing down the hallways.
Not yet.
Yeah. Give it time.
We're in the basement. Everything collects at the bottom.
Well, trust me. I know that. I used to have an office in the basement. And once again, I don't want to have any metaphors about me being down there and stuff collecting, but I get it.
In all seriousness, how has your city fared from some of the strong storms earlier this week? Have you had a chance to take stock of trees that were pulled up, other damage that was done?
Yeah, we actually got pretty lucky. When the alarms went off, we were hosting a couple meetings in the Morton Center. And a lot of people talk about the Morton Center and the condition that it's in. But one thing that we know for sure, it is sturdy. I mean, it's made of brick and concrete, and it's not going anywhere. So when the alarms went off, we had some staff there, and they were doing some, like I said, doing some classes and other things, and we got everybody into the basement. The odd thing was, though, is that a lot of water came along with the high winds. And unbeknownst to all of us, apparently there's an underground plumbing system that when it gets inundated with a lot of water, it starts percolating up through this portal in the basement. So everybody was locked in the basement, and they're seeing this water start percolating through. So they had these dreams of Poseidon adventure or something, So that was not cool. But overall, we had a few large limbs down. Our street department went ahead and took care of that. The big thing, though, was lines. Some of the power lines were getting a little loopy, and they were kind of hanging a little low. So we went ahead and called Duke. And at the time we called, it was still about halfway through some of the more serious moments of the storm. They already had 19 down lines just in the Twin City area. So they were keeping very busy, but they did their gig. They got it taken care of and everybody was safe. Nobody was hurt. So for a bad storm, we had a good outcome.
Let's get to some questions that have come in from listeners since the last
sure.
time we had you on the show. Sunder writes, I currently reside in Amberley Village community between Yeager and Calber. After speaking to many of the current residents, we would like to know if the city of West Lafayette is interested in acquiring the maintenance of Amberley Village from the current homeowners association. Part of the maintenance is done by the city, such as snow removal, road maintenance, and street lights. I would like to know if the city is interested in acquiring full responsibilities. If the city is interested, what do current residents need to do to pursue that process?
Well, sure. I mean, we could go ahead and look at it, but what they would need to do would be to have their neighborhood association draft some sort of document, seceding basically their ownership of their of the maintenance component of their neighborhood over to the city. Then we would have to look at it and see specifically what it is, what needs to be done. It's almost like when we take over roads and things from private operators. We want to make sure that when we take it over, it's going to be in decent enough condition to where you immediately don't go into a fiscal situation where we've got to repair and replace everything. I used to live out there, and I know that the Homeowners Association is very strong, and they do a great job in making sure that that neighborhood's kept up. I'm curious as to why, if it's an issue of finance or if it's an issue of just trying to get people to, help out and volunteer and do some of the work. So first step would be to go ahead and craft a letter and let us know what actually that means. And then we can go ahead and meet with them and see if it's fiscally, realistic. And then just see if we can't take it over completely, see what we can do to help them out if there's some circumstances that might need it.
And speaking of sending letters, you can do those via email. If you want to get a question on this program, the email address ask@WBAA.org. You can also tweet at WBAA News on Twitter or call us 765-496-1999.
Nice segue, Stan.
Thank you.
You are a professional, aren't you?
They tell me that, but I'm not so sure. Carl has written in. He says, it is often painfully obvious that the automatic traffic control system on State Street from the roundabout at Town Capawingo to beyond University Street does not do the job. He says when there is a convocation on campus and everyone's trying to get there, the mess at the bottom of the hill is not easy to get through. Stand there and watch it sometime, he says. Maybe there is a tie-up farther up the hill that should be remedied so that the backup at the bottom will not stall movement. Yes, I know there are other routes, he says, but this route through town and campus needs serious improvement, and maybe the others do also. We have talked on this program about all the way back to last August, mm-hmm. when State Street reopened, mm-hmm. when you were going to have all of the traffic control timed and mm-hmm. put in and networked together. Seems like a good opportunity to get an update on where that stands.
Sure. Well, we're still in the process of doing the project. And that's kind of a drag. When you actually name a project for one specific street in that project, the presumption is that when that street's done, the project's over. And it's not. The timing of the traffic lights, obviously I'm not a professional, Stan. But anyway, the timing of the traffic lights is something that we're going to get a lot more attention to once the other roads are completed. We have a ring road that's in the process of being built right now. And a lot of the constriction of the traffic is caused because we've shut down Stadium. We've shut down some of the connectors because of what we're doing on the other side of State Street. So that just naturally pushes a lot of traffic towards that major thoroughfare. So to do any kind of adjustment right now would probably send a false positive, and then it would also challenge some of the north-south directors, and we don't necessarily want to do that. What we do want to do is make sure that, you know, if there is areas where there is constriction, somebody needs to notify us immediately, and we can go ahead and either do some timing. We can either put a light on flash, or if necessary, we can have a police officer there to make sure traffic flows through safely. But what we have going on right now on both cities, we've got a lot of construction going on in the major arterials, and they connect to each other. So as we do, excuse me, as we do every year at this time, and this is my 11th time to do this, please be patient. It seems as though we are almost always under this bubble of under construction, but it's a reality. And the road projects that we're doing are pretty substantial, pretty comprehensive. There's a lot of things going on, a lot of moving parts, and it will eventually be done. And I'm not touching wood and tapping and saying and hoping that it will be. They will eventually be done. But in the interim, we will do what we can as local government to make sure that your traffic isn't backed up to the point where it's just hideous. But we can only respond to what we know. So everybody pretty much has a cell phone in their car now. So just let us know if things are going really bad, and we'll do something to remedy the situation as quickly as we can.
We've got one solution of sorts from Vince, who's written in, and he wonders, are there any plans to stop or at least restrict during rush hours left-hand turns on State Street through Chauncey Village? Also, the timing of the stoplights through the area is pretty bad, he says.
Yes, again, that's that timing issue, which we'll address in the future. The left-hand turns, that is a direct result of making the roads go two ways instead of one. The connector routes now are two ways instead of one. So the left-hand turns are obviously a natural sort of situation from that. We can look at it, but here's the deal. The road itself, because of where it is and because of what it all connects to, we want to make sure that traffic has access to these new two-way streets. When you get some of the traffic off the road, and when you improve the flow, and by that, you know, getting the lights sequenced and such, it would probably be a better time then to go ahead and do some assessment to see if they're practical and see if they're actually, you know, causing traffic issues, causing backups and things like that.
Let me interrupt here to say that it is worth noting, I think, that even before some of those arterial roads around State Street were closed, mm-hmm. in other words, the time from about August of last year when State Street reopened until mm-hmm. just a few weeks ago when the stadium and others mm-hmm. were closed, there was still a significant amount
sure.
of gridlock, a significant amount of problems that had nothing to do, obviously, with the arterial streets being closed because mm-hmm. they were still open. Mm-hmm. So I really don't know how much you can place on we've closed these other streets.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it is a reality. And the other reality is something that we will never get away from. And I just had a conversation about this earlier today. You know, the city of West Lafayette, because, and again, you've heard me pray on this all the time, but we are one of the most densely populated cities in the state. We're like the 26th most densely populated city in the country, and that's because we've got a small geographic footprint and we go up, not out. And because of that, we got a lot of people going to the same place at the same time. And when you throw into that mix the fact that we're a college town and we have a rush hour about every hour, that really creates a challenge as to how able we're going to be to get traffic flow. The easiest way would be to have no lights and just basically have a green light or a lighting system at the beginning and then a lighting system at the end and have a free-for-all. But that discounts the need for issues involving pedestrians, because for every car we probably have about three pedestrians or more. So it's an interesting dynamic to try and work out and make sure that people can get where they want to go safely, whether they're in a car, on a bike, or walking, or running, or whatever.
This is something else we've heard, by the way, is the pedestrian signaling works well at some times and not as well at other times. So what you have started doing at a couple of intersections in West Lafayette is stopping all traffic and turning on all of the pedestrian walk signals simultaneously.
So if people want
to walk catty corner across an intersection, they are able to do that without traffic coming at from any direction. However, one of the things that our listeners have noticed and mentioned to us is that, say, you're coming through campus early in the morning or late at night when there's not a lot of pedestrian traffic, those signals continue to function in that way.
They still do the scramble.
And you're sitting at an empty intersection where you're the only one in your car, and you could look any way you want and go, I don't see anybody. Yeah. And you're sitting there waiting for the non-existent scramble to happen.
Yeah, that we can fix. That we can fix. I can get with our traffic engineer and see if he can go ahead and have a look at that and make sure that that doesn't happen. But you do understand the practical application of a scramble.
Sure.
Generally,
yes.
It works.
I mean, it works for pedestrian safety at times when there are lots of pedestrians, but continues to hamper traffic at times when pedestrian flow goes down. So let me ask you this. What studies have you done to try to figure out which are the heavy pedestrian flow times so that you might have information to determine how you might make these fixes going forward?
Well, in all honesty, the only studies that we've done have been studies that have been done before the road was done, because the road is completely new and it's not finished yet. So we're putting devices in there that will allow for us to do some fine tuning on it. But as it stands right now, the road itself, it's new for traffic, vehicular traffic. It's new for pedestrians. The processes that we even use is new to some folks. On Grant Street, that's another interesting dynamic between Northwestern and State Street. There's two parking garages that feed it, and there's multiple pedestrian crossings. So oftentimes what happens on Grant, specifically during the rush hours, plural, from about 4 to 6, you have students that are entering into the crossing lanes, and the folks in the cars are really courteous. They'll stop for the students. And then as soon as one student gets in there, it's almost you get this trickle down from one student at a time. So it has had a tendency to really back traffic up, because the cars, again, being courteous, they don't edge their way into the crossblocks and get the traffic flow going. The second thing is that when the parking garage is empty, parking garages are warehouses for traffic jams, because as soon as it's time to go, everybody leaves the buildings at the same time, they get into the cars at the same time, and they try and leave at the same time. And again, Good Samaritans, they'll let somebody go through, and then there is a line of cars that go ahead and follow that first car through, which creates another situation where people are getting constricted. So those are things we all have to look at, because, you know, the streets aren't done yet. And to do anything permanently now would probably have to change as soon as everything else was done. And the other thing is...
So let me ask about that, because I need to ask, how labor-intensive is that? Theoretically, this feels like a computerized age where you can press a couple of buttons and you can go, set the timing this way on Mondays, set the timing this way on Tuesdays. Is it really all that labor-intensive to make a change now and then make another change later?
In some cases it is, because wherever there needs to be something done, it has to talk to something else. And we are still in the process of getting everything on fiber. And it's not like you can do with a cell phone where they talk to each other through the air. This is an underground thing and they're actually connected. And we're still running fiber all the way from the riverfront all the way out to 231. We're running fiber through the connector routes. And then it's got to plug into a system to where we can go ahead and from a laptop somewhere dial things in. It's kind of like what we used to use in the old days, back in my days. We used to have these things and we called them pickles. Can you imagine what a pickle is, Stan?
If you're not talking about something that comes from a cucumber, then no.
No, it's these things that we used to actually manually connect to the traffic box. They had those great big silver boxes that are near traffic lights. And an officer would stand there with this thing, and he'd have a red button, a green button, and a yellow button. He would stand around looking at traffic, and if he saw it backing up in one direction, he could go ahead and manually change the signal to where things would go. Well, lights aren't designed like that anymore, and they now have technology in them that allows for us to sync them remotely via you know, a laptop somewhere. So, and the other part of that is that's really expensive. It used to be if you used to run into a light pole, I mean, there was some cost involved, but now it's, wow, a lot more. We're progressing. You know, I would say that we're three quarters of the way of getting this all sorted out. But in the interim, as we've always said, you know, we've had the same conversation when we have major events, whether it be a football game or a basketball game. Let us know where things are choking down. Let us know where we can do a better job. We'll go ahead and respond to that. And then as we progress, we'll go ahead and get the technology up to speed to where we can do it remotely if need be.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA, talking today with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Call in your questions at 765-496-1999. Email ask at WBAA. .org or tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. Vince had another suggestion. He says, how about this for a city hall? Buy the Campus Inn at the bottom of State Street Hill.
I love when they start that way. I got an idea.
Tear it down and put the hall with a parking garage there. He says this would be a very accessible spot close to city center.
You got to buy it to own it.
That's true.
And it is not for sale. I mean, the one down there at the bottom of the hill, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
We have been interested in either a developer or even if it was reasonable, us going ahead and purchasing that. And unfortunately, the owners aren't really interested in selling. And so it is what it's been. And it's been there since I've been here, and that's like a bajillion years. And we have done a lot of things to try and encourage the sale of that product, but it's not working our way. But
speaking of City Hall, then,
maybe Vince needs to call the owner and say, hey, I got a great idea.
You could do that.
Yeah.
Speaking of City Hall, there was an update of sorts given late last month on that. It seemed, though, that you were still conversing with the consultant that the city had hired to determine what, if anything, you were going to do about City Hall. Are you any closer to making a decision whether to buy something or carve out a space or do anything at all?
Yeah, we're still having some conversations with folks about what specifically we're going to do. The real hard thing, I mean, obviously the what. I mean, what is City Hall these days? We're still having those kind of conversations. But the big deal now is, where is it going to be? And then with that understanding, when you know where, then you'll know basically the size and what we're going to offer within the building. One thing we know for sure is the way we are right now isn't very efficient. I've got department heads all over town, and that's kind of a drag. It's really hard to get some things done when everybody's all over the place. But City Hall itself, there are folks who believe that City Hall is sort of that iconic local government structure. You know, it's like Mayberry or RFD plus about 70. And we understand that, and we do want to really have a physical presence. But we also know that technology now has taken some of that, again, Mayberry-esque concept and put it in our back pockets with our cell phones. So we're doing these things, and they're called sensing sessions, which I think is a really cool name. But we're trying to figure out what it is that's going to be the best fit, because it's going to cost some bucks. It's going to cost millions to get something taken care of. And it has to work both ways. It has to be something that the public has immediate access to. It has to be something that can host special events, you know, if somebody wants to do something. And then it has to be something that works really well administratively for the folks that are going to be working in there. Hopefully I'll be one of those guys. And to make sure that we do the right thing with our citizens' money, we want to get enough guidance as we can. And we also want to sort of be realistic about things too, you know. Because of the cost of something like this, we just can't sit down and pull out our checkbook and write a check for it. It has to be in an area where we can finance it. So there's a lot of things to consider. There's a lot of things to look at. And there's a lot of things that we're hoping to get guidance from our citizenry.
Of course, it's going to be expensive. And you've talked a number of times on this program about the necessary utility of such a new place. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about the idea of it as a figurehead. Is it necessary, especially as you're trying to, as we've talked about many times, craft a downtown essentially from mm-hmm. scratch? Mm-hmm. Is it necessary to have a central building in that vicinity, perhaps, that signifies all of the change, that signifies this is a central point of contact with your local government?
I I think so.
Do others think so?
Well, that's the thing. I honestly believe that we are in this incredibly cool period in West Lafayette. This is sort of our Renaissance period. We are doing things now that we've done some of them that have completely changed what old West Lafayette once was. And the area where a lot of this is going on is in our downtown. You know, we're building this downtown. And I think that it would be really neat to have that governmental representation down in our Commerce Center, which should be this particular area. And then when you look at what we do on a little bit larger scale, obviously, we've got a great partnership with Purdue. Obviously, we've got a great partnership with Lafayette. And obviously, we have a great partnership with Tippecanoe County. Their homes are all basically on the same stretch of asphalt. So I think that it would be really neat to have that tie with the other forms of local government and our other partners and have it down here. But then there's got to be a lot of other stuff that have to work, too. I mean, we have to have parking. It has to be in a building that's going to be – or we have to have the space to build the building.
Strikes me that you have all kinds of empty space in the Wabash Landing shops that could easily be converted into a city hall that the city kind of already owns.
But that one-hour parking would really get people annoyed.
Well, you can change the parking anytime you want.
Have you been ticketed before?
No. Thankfully,
I have.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, I have. And you would think in the Mayor-Mobile they wouldn't do that, but apparently just no respect in this community, huh?
Well, I think there are plenty of opportunities to do this thing, and I'm sure this is something we'll talk about. By the way, while we're on this subject, the city's trying to carve out something like a 20-year redevelopment plan. Mm-hmm. And as you look at all of the change that State Street by itself is going to wreak on the city, mm-hmm. to say nothing of anything else you're doing anywhere else in the much, much larger footprint, mm-hmm. how do you determine what the city might look like in 2040 mm-hmm. when you have no idea what all of these changes along State Street are going to do to commerce, to the residential infrastructure, to your amount of cash flow? I mean, you can make guesses.
Oh, yeah.
But it'll be a while before you have enough data to determine what that actually does.
Well, I mean, you do things with the best intent. That's all you can do. I mean, we realize that. You know, when you have the population density like we do in this particular corridor, there's a lot of things that are going to be around for a long time. And then you look at, you know, society, you look at sociologically how things are growing and changing. You look at things that, you know, you look in these crystal ball-esque types of research that you use to make some of these predictive plans. And it comes along the line of what is, for instance, my grandson, what will Jonathan want when he's, you know, hopefully a Purdue student. And there's going to be some basic stuff that people always want. They always want interaction. They always want opportunities for recreation. They always want opportunities for retail. They want to be in an area where they can access, what we're learning now is the densely populated areas are popular amongst a certain age group.
It's worth noting, I don't want to be a naysayer here, but it's worth noting that this is exactly the same sort of discussion that was had about Wabash Landing, which has, I mean, the only way to describe it is boondoggle. It has not gone well for the city. I don't think anybody would argue otherwise. And so how do you avoid taking the sort of forecasting that went into creating Wabash Landing the way it has become and having that be what you forecast for State Street? I mean, I'm sure there was a rosy picture painted when Wabash Landing was outlined. Mm-hmm. And you're sort of looking at what looks, I admit, looks like a rosy picture now mm-hmm. for the economic development along State Street at the top of the hill. Things change, obviously.
They do. And I wasn't around for Wabash Landing. But there are, I really do think that there are certain trends that in retail, and again, I'm not a retail guy, certain trends in retail that are fashionable. I mean, and when I say fashionable is almost synonymous with temporary because fashion changes, you know, daily practically. But there are certain things that we know have lasted the test of time. People, it seems, really do enjoy the concept of individual units, not in a strip mall, but that characters, the buildings that have character and uniqueness to them. We were in Georgetown about a month or so ago with our DC trip, and when you walk up and down Georgetown, you look at the cityscape. that thing is awesome. It is beautiful. But the buildings themselves aren't necessarily what are attracting people there. It's what's housed in the buildings, and it's the fact that it has that buzz about it. And, you know, I mean, you look at some of the dates when those buildings were built, and they've been around since, you know, George Washington was.
Well, sure, but you're not Washington, D.C. You don't have nearly that population which can support what is throughout a lot of Washington, D.C., this kind of eclectic mix of locally owned shops and then right next door to some chain restaurant or store or whatever.
Yeah.
So you, it would seem like, have to be a little more careful because with less monetization than Washington, D.C. can offer, you have a little less margin for error.
Well, we do, but they have multiple blocks. They've got a massive multi-mile geographic footprint to deal with. We're talking about a road. And we're talking about a road that has a really neat locked-in market.
Well, right, but it also means that you're pinning your hopes on that one stretch of road rather than ameliorating it over a larger footprint.
Well, for now. When you look at what people are talking about doing with that particular area, and let's just talk about the immediate north and south of State Street, the north end is predominantly going to be the academic side. The south side is going to be predominantly commercial, retail, and then residential. And because of who we have coming here and because of where they're coming from all around the world, the finger cross, you know, the hope is that we will be agile enough to respond to that. You know, it kind of gets to that chicken or the egg thing. You know, what do people are attracted by? They're attracted by the building or the business. And the hope is that they're attracted by the business. But it has to be accessible. And again, one of the major intents of the State Street project is to make things walkable, bikeable, and drivable. And if that's the case with our student population and with the reality that a lot fewer of them are coming to campus with cars now, it seems that that's the way it's going to be. Now, that's Y2K plus 18 and then give another 20 on top of that. What happens after that? Don't know. I mean, we could be in Jetsonsville. Who knows?
I still want a flying car.
I can't authorize that, Stan.
Will you get a ticket if you have a flying car and it's above the parking space?
if it's hovering?
Yes.
It depends what fits underneath it.
I see. So let me ask real quick. I noticed that there's been some construction and it looks like actually demolition at Wabash Landing over the last few weeks. It's still not anywhere where anybody wants it to be in terms of investors clamoring to get in there.
Yep.
What are you going to do there now that construction on the road outside of it is mostly done? Is there any plan for reinvestment there, or has the city kind of given up on that and you're hoping for the larger State Street project to be some sort of reinvigorator later?
We actually are, and again, this is big, you know, ticket stuff. We're looking at that whole area. I mean, when you look at the levee area, you look at Wabash Landing, you know, like where the neon cactuses and all of that. That is a perfect area to have a gridded downtown. I mean, you've got the geographic footprint. The size is perfect for that. And it would be a great place to start building that actual, remember, the old classic style downtown of West Lafayette. That's our hope. And again, you know, as they say, hope is what Christmas is for.
Hope springs eternal, as we say at this point in the calendar. Well, that's all the time we've got. Thanks, as always, for your time. We'll do it again next month.
I'll be here.
Remember to tune in at this time next week for our conversation with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We should point out that show will be pre-recorded, so get those questions in by emailing them to ask@wbaa.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.